Okay, tonight we are looking, this is a series we are going through on prophets who didn't write a book. And the reason we're entitling that is sometimes when we think about prophets, we think about those who wrote a book. We think about the major prophets, the minor prophets, sometimes we recognize there are other prophets, but those are the ones who come to mind. So spending time on Wednesday nights over these few weeks, looking at some men who were prophets, but who did not write what we would think of as a major part of our Bibles, although some of these men did do some writing. So tonight we're looking at Gad and Nathan, two prophets together. If I were to ask you what you knew about these men, my guess is you might know a little bit more about the second name than you do the first name. When you hear the name Gad, you may think of the 12 sons of Jacob. Think about Gad as one of his sons. But that's not the Gad that we are looking at tonight. There is a prophet by the name of Gad. What do these two men have in common? Gad and Nathan. They both were prophets for a particular king. And you probably can guess that based upon the second name, maybe better than you can guess it on the first name. Whose king was Nathan? David. All right. So Nathan is that king or that prophet that interacted with David, and we're going to look at him in the second part of this lesson tonight. But we may not know Gad, and I'm not suggesting that you don't. Many of you are very good Bible students. There's just some names that don't stick as well as some other names, and sometimes some names, some people are not as well known as others. Is that true just in life in general? That some people are more well known, some people stick in your mind just in general, people that you meet better than others? Do you ever have trouble when you go to a doctor's office and you're filling out all this paperwork trying to remember all of your doctor's names and their phone numbers and all of their contact information? So sometimes it's hard to keep up with all that information. So what do we know about Gad? What do we know about Nathan? Get your Bibles and go back to the book of 1 Samuel. This is where we're going to start tonight and looking at these two men. And when we get to 1 Samuel, we're going to encounter Gad for the first time. 1 Samuel 22 is where we're going to be when we encounter Gad for the first time. But let me throw a different word at you when it comes to Gad, because if we were to jump over, we don't necessarily have to. If we were to jump over to 2 Samuel, we would find a different word than prophet used for Gad. We would see Gad called David's seer. Do you see that word? It's in 2 Samuel 24 and verse 11. Over in that text, he's called David's seer. What does that mean, a seer? Does that mean he burned... He burned the meat really good? He put a good sear on the meat? I mean, what does that mean? He's a seer. Okay. One thing we would think about is that he's somebody who could see into the future. And as a prophet, that's often the case, that a prophet was somebody who would often see things into the future that others could not see. This word, the first time we come across this word seer, 2 weeks ago, we didn't get to this point in the lesson 2 weeks ago, but we were studying about Samuel 2 weeks ago. And in 1 Samuel chapter 9 is the first time we come across this word seer as it is applied to Samuel. So it's not intended to be a special word or a tricky word. It's more of an older term than prophet is. Prophet was kind of a newer term sometimes, but seer was kind of an older term that just meant somebody who was seeing things, maybe into the future or just even in the present, seeing things that other people could not see. Well, how could somebody see something that other people couldn't see? Is it because they had bifocals? And here's the reason. Use these words interchangeably: seer and prophet. Seers were able to see things that other people couldn't see because God was showing it to them. What was a prophet doing? A prophet was speaking for God. He was in the place of God speaking to the people in God's place. What was a seer? Same thing. But a seer was just somebody who was seeing things that God showed him. So I think that's an interesting term. But 1 Samuel 22, first time that we come across Gad. Now, when you're in 1 Samuel 22, is David king? Just say no to this question, okay? Is David king yet? No. Good answer. All right. He's not king yet, but he's got a prophet. Is he a prominent person yet in 1 Samuel 22? Prominent person? Oh, yeah, prominent person. Is he gaining popularity in Israel? Yes. By the time we get to 1 Samuel 22, has Saul, King Saul, has he already learned your kingdom is being taken away from you? It's not going to continue in your family. It's going to be... Has that already occurred? Yep, already occurred. You go back to chapter 13, chapter 15, that's a done deal. You go back to chapter 17, and in chapter 17 is where we read about David and Goliath. Now, whether all of this is chronological is another issue, but when we get to this point, David is rising in the view of the people, and yet where is David in 1 Samuel 22? And let me ask you this question, and here's the answer. No. Is David in Jerusalem? Good answer. No, he's not in Jerusalem. Is he in Judah? Is he even in the realm of the land of God? No, he's not with God's people. Why? Well, why not? Is he on vacation?
No, they're chasing him.
Who's chasing him?
Saul.
King Saul is chasing him. What do you do when somebody's chasing you?
Run.
Do you? I want to see some of you do that. Some of you might just give up, be like, I'm not running. But when you were a kid, if somebody was chasing you, I mean, you ran, right? So now Saul's not just chasing him because he's playing tag. Why is Saul chasing him? Wants to kill him. You're going to run even faster. All right. So David's running away from him and he gets to Moab here in 1 Samuel chapter 22. And look in verse 2. How many men, the end of verse 2, how many men does he have with him? 400. He's doing pretty good. That's more men than you've got with you. He's got 400 men with him. David went from there to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, look in verse 3, who else does David have with him? Who? His parents. He's a pretty decent guy, isn't he? He's running for his life. And who does he take with him? Why does he take mom and dad with him? I mean, are they in ill health and he's got to watch over them? Ah, if he's wanting to kill me, I'm not leaving mom and dad behind. I mean, if he can't find me, what's he going to do? Well, next best thing, I'll kill mom and dad. Pretty good fella. He takes mom and dad with him. But David's on the run here, right? He can't stay in one place very long. So what does he ask the king about mom and dad? What does he want to do with mom and dad? Can I leave them here? So he leaves mom and dad. Can you imagine leaving your parents in a foreign nation with foreign people and a foreign leader? And that's better than leaving them at home. Wow. Okay. I'm not going to go there. But okay. Anyway, verse 4. He brought them before the king of Moab. They dwelt with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Now the prophet, here's the first time we come across his name. Now the prophet Gad said to David, he just pops on the scene here. Prophet Gad pops on the scene and he says, do not stay in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah. We don't know everything that's going on here. Why did Gad tell David, and the answer is we don't know all that's going on here. Why did Gad tell David to leave this place? Where's he going back to? You got to go back to Judah. You got to go back home. Where did Gad get this information, do you suppose? From God. What's he called? The prophet. This isn't just some random guy coming to David and say, hey, you know, I've been looking at your war map here, and I think you're going to be safer over here. This isn't some random guy coming and talking to David. This is somebody who has some kind of strategy from God that's saying to David, this is what you need to do. Is there any application in that for us? Do we need to listen to the strategy that God gives to us for our lives and recognize that if we're not in a place that we need to be, that maybe we need to make some changes? Now, I want you to fast forward to 2 Samuel chapter 24. Here we are, 1 Samuel 22. Was David king yet? Not king yet. Fast forward all the way to the end of 2 Samuel. Is David king at the end of, say yes. Is David king at the end of 2 Samuel? Yes. All right. But what's happening with David? What's happening with his reign when we get to the end of 2 Samuel? His reign is coming to an end. Why? What'd you say? He's an old man. Well, look at the first verse of 1 Kings. First verse of 1 Kings says that David was what? All right, so I didn't say it. God did. All right? Do you know what his age was? I didn't use the word. God did. Do you know what his age was at this point? He was 30 years old when he became king. How long did he reign? 30 plus 40. Okay, so God said that's that word. Okay? I didn't. Now, lifespan back in that day was a little bit different than it is in this day, right? Anyway, you get to 2 Samuel chapter 24. We're near the end of David's reign because in 1 Kings chapter 1, the very next chapter, we're going to get there hopefully. David installs Solomon in his place. But what is David going to do in 2 Samuel chapter 24? Maybe you've got a chapter heading. Tells you what he's going to do. He's going to take a census. He wants to know how many people he's got. From your knowledge of this chapter, is that a good thing for David to do or a not so good thing for David to do?
Not so good. God told him don't count the people.
Not so good.
Not so good. In fact, when you get over to chapter, is it verse 11? Verse 10. Verse 10, David says, I have sinned. Verse 17, David says, I have sinned. Why would it have been a sin for David to count the people? God didn't want him to. There's your answer. Over in 1 Chronicles, if you were to look at the parallel, do you know that there's parallel? You know how Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John have parallel passages? You know how that works, right? You read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you might be reading about him feeding the 5,000 in Matthew chapter 14. But if you go over to John chapter 6, guess what you read? He's reading the 5,000. Was that two different stories? Same story. Different writer, right? So you know parallel passages in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know that you have them with 1st, 2nd Chronicles as well, right? You know that there are parallel passages that 1st and 2nd Chronicles are basically a view of all of the history of Israel from the beginning all the way until they go back home from captivity. So it takes you from Adam, 1st, 2nd Chronicles take you from Adam all the way through their Babylonian captivity and when Cyrus, king of Persia, sends them back at the end of 2nd Chronicles. So 1st, 2nd Samuel, you're reading about 1 Samuel, reading about King Saul as king. 2 Samuel, reading about King David. 1 Kings, you're reading about Solomon, the first half of the book. And then you're reading about the divided kingdom and the divided kingdom in all of 2 Kings. And so there's parallel with 1 and 2 Chronicles. You know that. So if you go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 21, you read there that Satan came along and put it in David's heart to number the people. If Satan tries to get you to do something, is that a good idea? No, I don't think so either, John. That's a bad idea. And so anyway, where does Gad come into play here? So David numbers the people, which he should not have done. Even Joab's trying to prevent him from doing it. Verse 10, 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 10. David's heart condemned him after he numbered the people. Isn't that the way sin usually works? Why doesn't your heart condemn you before you commit the sin? Now, sometimes it does, right? Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's not until after you've committed the sin that your heart wakes up. So David said to the Lord in verse 10, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. Verse 11, now when David arose in the morning, the word of the Lord came to the prophet who? Prophet who? Gad, David's seer. There's that verse we mentioned a little while ago. So the word of the Lord comes to Gad, and the Lord tells Gad to go to David. Does sin have consequences? David sinned. He confessed that sin. If you confess a sin to God, does that mean that the earthly consequences, ramifications of that sin, are necessarily going to be taken away? Not necessarily. Sometimes you're still going to have to pay, not because you're separated from God anymore, but because sin has consequences. Is that a good lesson for us to learn? Well, that's something for David to learn. So God gave him look in verse 12, I offer you three things. Choose one of these. Can you imagine if God gave you the option? Okay, David Sproul, you've sinned. Here's three options for you. Here's three punishments for you. How would you like that? No, thank you. I mean, here's one, here's two, here's three. You know what I would pick? D, none of the above, right? I mean, but that's not an option. So you can pick famine for how long in verse 13? How long would the famine be?
7 years.
7 years. Boy, that sounds like a good one, right? No, no, I'm not going to do that. All right, so you can be pursued by your enemies for how long? 3 months. Well, that doesn't sound very exciting. Or you're going to have a plague for how long? 3 days. 7 years, 3 months, or 3 days? What does David choose? Pestilence for 3 days. Not an easy choice. You don't want any of those. Can you imagine being Gad? I mean, on the screen, Gad denounced sin and communicated the punishment for the sin. Can you imagine being Gad and you've got to go tell the king this? David's 70 years old. He's an old man. And you get to go tell this old man, okay, here's what God said. Kind of like Samuel 2 weeks ago when we talked about Samuel having to go talk to Eli. I don't really want to tell you this, but here's what God said. I don't really want to tell you this, but here's what God said. What does David do in verse 14? What does David say? Yippee, this is great. What does he say? No. I am in what? Great distress. Please let us fall into the hand of the Lord because we can't stand falling into the hand of men. So the Lord, verse 15, sent a plague upon Israel from the morning until the appointed time, from Dan to Beersheba. Remember we mentioned a couple weeks ago, that's from north to south. That's the entire land. How many men died, verse 15? 70,000 died. Verse 16, the angel stretched out his hand over Jerusalem, and who stopped the angel in verse 16? God did. The angel stretched out his hand to do destruction over Jerusalem, and the Lord said, that's it. And so the end of verse 16, the angel of the Lord was by the, we're going to get to this, he was by the threshing floor of Arunah, the Jebusite. Verse 17, David spoke to the Lord. In verse 14, David spoke to Gad. Here David speaks to God. And he says, surely I have sinned and I have done wickedly, but these sheep, what have they done? Let your hand, I pray, be against me and against my father's house. What a man. What a man that says, this punishment should be on me, not on these people. But Gad is the man who's responsible. He's the prophet. Now, think about how long Gad's been with him. That was my point a little while ago, and I didn't finish it. We were in 1 Samuel 22. He wasn't even king yet. Here we are in 2 Samuel 24. He's been king for 40 years. And guess who's still by his side? Gad. He still has this prophet, still has this seer who is coming and delivering these messages to him from the Lord. And this one was a pretty tough pill to swallow, pretty tough message to receive. So verse 18, same chapter. Gad comes again, verse 18. Gad came that day to David, and he said, here's how you're going to fix this. Here's how you're going to fix this plague and this punishment that you're receiving. Go up erect an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Arunah the Jebusite. So David, according to the word of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. So who's telling him what to do, Gad or the Lord? Lord's telling him what to do. Who's the mouthpiece? Gad. It's interesting that verse 18 says, Gad came and said. Verse 19, David did according to the word of Gad, as the Lord commanded. David is doing what God tells him to do, but who's telling Gad what to tell David to do? Well, God. So is David obeying Gad or is he obeying the Lord? The Lord. That's important, isn't it? That's going to come into play here, and there's a couple reasons I'm emphasizing it, but that's going to come into play here again in a little while. So David wants to do what the Lord wants him to do. So Arunah looked, verse 20, and saw the king and his servants coming toward him, and he went out and bowed before the king with his face to the ground. You know this story, but I want you to see this. Arunah said, verse 21, why has the Lord my king come to his servant? You think he was nervous? Yeah. I mean, why are you here? Is everything okay? And David said, I've come to buy your threshing floor and to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be withdrawn from the people. So Arunah said, let the Lord my king take and offer whatever seems good to him. Look, here are oxen for burnt offering and threshing implements and the yokes of the oxen for wood. Here are all of these things. Verse 23, Arunah, he's talking about himself in the third person, has given to the king. These are yours. Take them. And he said to the king, may the Lord your God accept you. You would have done that, wouldn't you? King comes, wants the threshing floor, wants to build an altar to sacrifice to God. What would you charge the king? Be like, all right, I can charge you whatever I want, right? Or are you going to say, it's yours. You take what you want. You know what David says, one of the greatest lines in all the Bible, verse 24. No, but I will surely buy it from you for a price. Nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which costs me nothing. Isn't that interesting? He's getting ready to make a sacrifice to his God. You're right, John, it is heavy. Wouldn't that be easy? I mean, if you're walking in here on a Sunday morning, and most of you do it electronically now, I know, but imagine back in the day, you're walking in here on Sunday morning, and you were planning to put $50 in the plate. And somebody met you at the door and said, hey, here's $50. Would you like this to put in the plate to the Lord today? Wow, I got off today. This guy gives me 50 bucks. I walk in here, drop in the back to 50 bucks. I gave 50 bucks to the Lord. No problem, no foul. I'm out of here. And I still got my 50 bucks in my pocket. Isn't that similar? I mean, it's a freebie, right? That's awesome. God, because God still got his money. Is God interested in the 50 bucks?
Nope.
He's interested in you. And you didn't give anything. In that scenario, you didn't give anything. You just transferred it from one place to another. David says, I'm not going to do that. It's got to cost me. It's got to come from me. You giving it to me to give to God, I'm just the middleman. That's nothing. So David bought the threshing floor at the end of verse 24. And he bought the oxen. He built the altar. He offered the burnt offering, the peace offerings. And the Lord heeded the prayers for the land, and the plague was withdrawn from Israel. Who's the prophet who told him to do that? We run right over Gad. We know that whole story. But I'm not sure if you had asked me who told David to do this, I would have had to think for a while to come up with Gad. Because that's, to me, it's not a major part. To me, the major part of the story is getting rid of the plague. It's not the guy who's doing the talking. But guess what? That's the whole point of a prophet, is for the story not to be about him. Point of the story of a prophet is, there's God, here's you, and I'm just the conduit to get the information to you. If the story's all about the prophet's got himself in the way. It shouldn't be about him. Guess what? That's what preaching is today. If it's all about the preacher, he's getting himself in the way. Because his job is to say, here's what God says, and to get himself out of the way. Now, one little note here. Whose threshing floor was this? Arunah. The who? The Jebusite. Do you know what was eventually built at this location? The temple. David comes and buys this plot of land to offer a sacrifice to God. And David loved that place so much. You know what? We'll just build a temple here for God. Did David end up building the temple?
Nope.
Did not. Solomon did. But David helped to make those preparations. So here's Gad. Maybe somebody we don't know very well. A man who stood in the gap between God and David to deliver different kinds of messages. Some of them were just military messages. Some of them were punishment. But some of them were, here's how you fix this. Here's how you fix this with God. Y'all got any thoughts? Any comments on Gad, John?
Well,
he did sin. And whether we can count up his sins or not, David did sin. But what you're saying is the key about David. He's described as a man after God's own heart. Well, what kind of man after God's own heart sins? Well, guess what? We all do. So what could make a sinner like David to be called a man after God's own heart is the word that you were using. What did David do when he sinned? He repented. And so there was a change that came about in his heart. And that's when we read in verse 10, David's heart condemned him. Why did his heart condemn him? I've done wrong against my God. And he says very hard words, I've sinned. I've done this wrong. And so he's willing to do whatever he needs to do to fix it. Oh, here's an altar. No. I've got to show my God how much I have repented and how much my God means to me and what I'm willing to do for my God in order to make this right with him. What about Nathan? What do we know about Nathan? Now, what's interesting about Gad and about Nathan is that David's got more than one prophet in his pocket. All right? He's got more than one person who is a go-between between God and him. So come back, 2 Samuel, come back to chapter 7. And this is the first time in 2 Samuel chapter 7 that we're going to read about Nathan. And again, he just drops on the scene without much of an without really any introduction at all. He drops on the scene. So 2 Samuel chapter 7, 2 Samuel chapter 6. You remember the story in 2 Samuel chapter 6? If I say the name Uzzah, remember the story about Uzzah? What was the deal with the story? What was happening in the story of Uzzah?
They were bringing the ark back.
Bringing the ark back, all right? So they're transporting the ark. They're trying to get the ark back to where it needs to be. And obviously we know the story of Uzzah and all of that. So in 2 Samuel chapter 7, it says in verse 1, it came to pass when the king was dwelling in his house, the Lord had given rest from all of his enemies all around. The king said to Nathan, first time you're going to read his name. Who is this guy? He's Nathan the who? The prophet. That's all you need to know. So David says to Nathan the prophet, not to Gad the prophet, different prophet, see now, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwells where? I've got this nice house. I've got this beautiful home, and God's living in a tent. The ark of the covenant is living in a tent. Now, here's a man after God's own heart. Doesn't that sound like a right thing for somebody to think? Who am I to live here? And in the presence of God is dwelling in this tattered old tent out here? So Nathan said to the king, verse 3, go, do all that is in your heart, for the Lord is with you. He's got the information he wants, right? He goes to the prophet. Prophet's supposed to speak for God. He goes to the prophet, and he says to the prophet, not right, God needs a house. And Nathan says, you go and do it, and the Lord is with you. What's the first word you have in verse 4? You got the word and? Some translations have the word but. Something's going to happen in verse 4. He tells David in verse 3, the Lord's with you. But it happened that night, verse 4, that the word of the Lord came to Nathan. What came to Nathan?
The word of the Lord.
Oh. Did the word of the Lord come to Nathan in verse 3? Nope, didn't come. But the word of the Lord came to Nathan in verse 4. And he said, go tell my servant David. What are the next four words? This is what God says. Thus says the Lord. You go back, and it's put in a question form here in verse 5. Would you build a house for me to dwell in? Again, if you look at the parallel account over in 1 Chronicles 17, it's stated in an affirmative that says, you are not going to build me a house. I want you to think about being Nathan here. The first time Nathan says, yeah, go ahead, build God a house. Where did Nathan get that information? What? Nathan just, I mean, how could this be wrong, right? I mean, David's such a good man. He wants to build the Lord a house? Of course he should build. There's nothing wrong with building the Lord a house, is there? I mean, he shouldn't have to dwell there. And if David's going to have this kind of house, he ought to make the Lord a great house. Absolutely, David, the Lord's with you. Feels right, doesn't it? What could be wrong with this? It's just a house after all. I mean, God could dwell there in this tent, or he could dwell. I mean, but it's still the presence of God. What does it matter where he dwells? What does the Lord come to Nathan and say? You messed up, buddy. You go back to David with your tail between your legs and you say, oh, here's actually what the Lord says. When a prophet spoke, were they infallible? When a prophet opened his mouth, was he always saying what God wanted him to say? Well, how do you, boy, that's, well, I mean, but if a prophet said it, right? Put it in today's terminology. My preacher told me this. My preacher said this wasn't that big of a deal. My preacher said, you know, as long as you're worshiping God and it's coming from your heart, then do whatever feels right in your heart. But as long as you're praising God, then you can't say one method of worship is wrong and the other method of worship is right. That happened today?
Yep.
Preacher says this, a preacher says that, says this. Well, I mean, they know, right? They spend time in the book, right? They speak for God, right? Isn't it interesting, the very first time we're introduced to the prophet Nathan, he's not speaking for the Lord, but he says he is. What do we need to do? Well, I mean, the lesson there is obvious, but what do we take from that? What application should we make from that?
Nathan's got to make it right.
Okay, Nathan's got to make it right, and he does. He goes to David, and he says, okay, here's what the Lord actually said. How do we apply that in our lives today? In this situation in dealing with Nathan, how do we apply that to us today? And the Bible's living, right? It's not just a story here. It's Romans chapter 15 says it's there for our learning. Okay, what do I learn from this?
When you do wrong, you got to make it right.
Okay. When I do wrong, I got to make it right. What else do we learn? What do we learn about listening to other people? What did the Bereans do in Acts 17? Why? Make sure that what they were being told was so. Just because somebody says something that sounds good or it's what you want to hear. Did Nathan tell David what he wanted to hear? Yeah. I want to do this? Great. Guess what AI is built to do? Guess what ChatGPT is built to do? To tell you what you want to hear. That's the way it's built. And so you go and you ask it, and unless you put some specific parameters around it, which you can do, it's going to tell you what you want to hear. Well, that sounds like a good resource for us, right? I mean, it's AI, right? It's intelligence. I ask it a question. It knows more about the Bible than I do. So whatever it says has got to be right. Really? What are its sources? What's it drawing on? How do I know that AI is really intelligence. I mean, and it spits back all of this information. It puts Bible verses with all of it. It's got to be right, right? Wrong. Just because it spits back that information doesn't make it right. I need to listen. I need to check what every preacher, every teacher, every AI, every website. I can't trust this. One of the, and I'm not going to mention the name of it, but one of the most popular religious websites out there that answers supposed Bible questions. Very popular, has thousands of questions that it's answered. Well, I just go there, and I mean, this guy had a good write-up, and it sounds right. Something sounds right. Does that make it right? That's what we learned from Nathan and David here. Just because something sounds right doesn't make it right. Now, so Nathan comes to David, and as he continues this message to David, and makes sure here's what the Lord says. What does the Lord say? You're not going to build me a house, but I am going to build you a house. Well, that seems kind of backwards, doesn't it? I was going to build you. I mean, have you ever had somebody do that for you? You tried to give them, no, you can't give me something. I'm going to give you something. No, I was giving you something first, right? I started this, and here's God. You're not going to build me a house, but David, I'm going to build you. What's he talking about? David's like, I already got a house. Remember, I got a house of cedar. It's better than your house, man. God, I've got a better house than you. What are you talking about? What is God talking about? We've got 4 minutes, so we can't digest all of this. What does he tell him? Look at verse 12. When your days are fulfilled and you rest with your fathers. That's a nice way of saying what?
You're gonna die.
When you're dead. All right, so I'm going to do something for you when you're dead. Oh, thanks. That's great. I will set up your seed after you who will come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom for how long?
Forever.
Forever. Look at verse 16. God is talking to David. Your house and your kingdom shall be established forever before you. Your throne shall be established, well, forever. What's he talking about? He's talking about Jesus. What house, what kingdom was Jesus going to come and set up? The church. When Jesus is going to be born to Mary in Luke chapter 1, verses 31, 32, and 33, guess what God quotes to Mary in Luke chapter 1? What we just read right there. And it says, it's time. The Jews had been waiting for this for 1,000 years to be fulfilled. What was Jesus called repeatedly? Especially read through the book of Matthew. What's he called repeatedly? The Son of David. Why was he called the Son of David? I mean, he's like ancient, great, 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 great grandson of David. Because he's the guy that they've been waiting for. They were waiting for this to be fulfilled. And who said this? Nathan did. Nathan, who first made a mistake, now comes and makes a prophecy that the Jews hung on to for 1,000 years. And were waiting for it to be fulfilled. And it was fulfilled. It was fulfilled when Jesus came. Now, we have a minute. Nathan is most famous in chapter 12. Most famous in chapter 12. You read about David and Bathsheba in chapter 11. Can you imagine being Nathan and you've got to go confront David about his sin? Can you imagine being Ananias and you got to go talk to Saul of Tarsus about the gospel? Here's Nathan, and he's got the job. You go talk to the king. Yeah, he's committed adultery. Yes, he did already kill one man, Uriah. And yes, you go talk to him and you convince him that he's living in sin. Did David listen right away? It took a while to get through to him. But Nathan is the man who came and talked to David. Think about this. One prophet, Gad, comes to David. You've sinned in numbering the people. Another prophet, Nathan, comes to David. You've sinned. And you think it's mainly with Bathsheba? Mainly what God talks about is what he did to Uriah. And you read Matthew chapter 1 and the genealogy of Jesus, and guess who shows up there? Uriah. What he did to Uriah. Anyway, two prophets to the same man, to tell him that he had sinned. Who is this man? David, man after God's own heart. But how did David respond in both cases? I've sinned. I've done wrong. And he wants to make it right with God. I should have left our times at the same time slots, David. I shouldn't have given us 40. Anyway, all right, so a lot there. Read chapter 12. It's a fun chapter. Thank you all very much for being here tonight.